Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
I have like really thick hair, you know, so I have to get a haircut every week. like no joke, I have to get thinned out.
Better than the alternative.
Hey, everybody, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, Democrat Robert Rivas took over as Assembly Speaker last June following a bruising power struggle with the previous Assembly leader. Now he's charged with leading the lower house as California struggles with a budget deficit and ongoing questions over how to handle issues like public safety, the fentanyl crisis, and homelessness.
Robert Rivas began representing Salinas in the Assembly in 2018. The grandson of Mexican-American farm workers who organized with Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, he served on the San Benito Board of Supervisors, and he's a dad, too. Speaker Rivas, welcome back to The Breakdown.
Hey there. Thanks for having me. It's obviously great to be back.
It's great to be back. It's been about a year since we had you. You've been on the job for about 9 months. I'm curious, your assessment, how's it gone? You came in really promising to try to be more inclusive in decision making. How's it all going?
It's been busy. I feel things have gone well. You know, certainly, I knew what to expect when I came into this role, and I knew what was expected of me from my colleagues. So certainly I haven't been surprised by anything. But really nothing.
No surprises at all.
No surprises. Certainly the schedule is challenging. I've always said the most challenging part of this job, whether it was, when I was elected to the Assembly or now a speaker, is just the time away from home and missing, that time from my daughter, from my family. But, certainly grateful I couldn't do this job without them and the support that they have shown me.
Yeah, you say missing home, and it just occurred to me as you said that a lot of speakers have come from L.A. or San Francisco. It's a lot easier to get there than back to where you're from. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we, have a pretty aggressive travel schedule. My leadership style has always been about engagement. That's always been my currency. We can't begin to understand problems unless we know those problems and engage with stakeholders. And so a state like ours is very large. So we maintain a heavy travel schedule, but you're right. That travel to and from our district to Sacramento, it's about a 2-hour and 15-minute drive, and then we're constantly on the road when the months we're not in session, but even the weekends. After a few things to do. A long week, yeah. We're constantly in Los Angeles and in all parts of California.
So I mentioned at the top, your grandfather was a Mexican immigrant, a lead organizer for farm workers, and you represent Salinas, which is, Scott alluded to, I think it's the first time in a generation we've had a rural speaker. Can you give us an example or two of how your family background, your upbringing, where you're from, has affected how you're leading here or bills that we're seeing put forward, anything like that?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. As I mentioned, my currency, my leadership style is always about engagement. So certainly I was raised in a migrant farm worker labor camp by migrant farm workers who always taught me that, we always had to back each other, to get ahead. And we always had to keep our heads down and work hard. But it was always fighting for the underdog. And so for me, I'm not going to reinvent myself as speaker. My focus will continue to be on those issues important to our district while fighting to understand and work with my colleagues the issues that their districts face. This is a large state, mm-hmm. and it's an incredibly a diverse state with many challenges. And we know, as we've said it many times, there's no silver bullet when it comes to, a legislative solution for housing, for homelessness, because every region is impacted differently. And that's what I've learned in my travels throughout California is, in order to regionalize these issues and build a very strategic approach in how we're addressing problems regionally, is something that I've been very focused on working with my colleagues. I have been very, very much engaged in our work, all aspects of the Speaker's office, especially on a policy level, and so proud of the progress and the foundation that we've built thus far.
I think after you became Speaker, you gave a speech and said that it would be good for members to focus less on how many bills we can pass and more on the impact that we're having. Do you feel like the legislature just puts too many bills out there, and have you done anything to rein that in?
Yeah, the actual bill number, that's something that we will assess at the end of the year. It's, the start of every two-year session, that's when we can adjust those rules to adjust those limits. And so that's something that we will look very closely at the end of this year. But, certainly what I'm looking for is, to build coalitions around these large ideas. Yes, we have a very large Assembly Democratic Caucus of 62 members strong. And so there are various opinions on any number of on policy issues and policy areas. But for me, it's building this foundation where we could have, these discussions and work towards building consensus and making progress on so many other areas. It seems at times in my short time in the legislature that we're, not getting to the root causes of problems and solving those problems and offering solutions to make a bigger difference. It seems like we're just chipping around the edges. And so that requires a lot of coalition building and bringing people together.
So one of the powers of the speakership is assigning committee chairs, picking leadership. I'm curious, broad brushstrokes, what considerations did you make when deciding who to put in those roles? Are you thinking about their politics, their loyalty to you, their effectiveness?
That is a great, great question. And many people were asking me leading up to it. And so obviously, it was not easy to make those decisions. As I mentioned, we have a caucus of myself and 61 other members. And so there are a number of factors that I considered. In particular, it was, one, their interest in a policy area. I spent a lot of time with all members of our caucus, and they shared with me, they didn't hesitate to share with me what their interests were. And so obviously that was a factor into the decision-making process.
Yeah, they're all lobbying you. We know that, right?
but obviously, their interests, geography, the districts they represent.
And wanting that to look even in terms of
absolutely.
How it's put out there.
My focus has always been to, elevate these important voices, and I know that, I've said it many times. I know the governor's mentioned it. I'm proud to lead a legislature there in the assembly that is the most diverse legislative body anywhere in the world. And it's important to elevate these voices at the highest levels of state government. And so I'm very proud of the appointments we made, elevating so many women to leadership positions. And that certainly, is something I'm very proud of. And all that is part of the considerations in making those decisions.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you think, given the background that you described a moment ago, your family history and so on, if you think that on some issues it gives you more sort of authority or street cred to take a position on something that maybe a previous speaker or another speaker would not have had, and if so, like what?
Sure. As I mentioned, I'm never going to, I'm not going to reinvent myself, as speaker. I'm still going to focus on the issues that are important to me in my region and district. I think the one example I can share is, when I got here, the governor really spoke about our housing crisis and doing a lot more, going above and beyond to solve the crisis. And I can recall at the time, there was a lot of discussion within the assembly of how we solve the housing crisis. And there was stakeholder groups. And so I kind of immersed myself in those discussions at the urging of David Chu, who was housing chair. Because my concern was in all of these discussions around housing, no one was talking about how we address our housing solutions in rural California. Mm. And I myself, I'm not a housing expert, but I know from experience what it was like to live in overcrowded housing. I lived with, as I mentioned, as a migrant farm worker labor camp, it was a two-unit housing complex. I lived there with some 10 members of my family. And I remember as a kid how challenging it was to focus and study. And so for me, that issue is only exacerbated in our current region. I had it tough growing up, but much more challenging for families today. Critical overcrowding, families living with complete strangers, and we're not I felt we weren't bringing enough attention of the issue and offering some solutions to support these very vulnerable residents in our rural areas. So
that begs the question. One of the sort of analyses of your committee chairs and leadership positions was that the YIMBYs won, that this was a very yes, pro-housing group of folks. Do you agree with that assessment?
It's interesting point, but you know, it wasn't part of you know, any kind of plan I had. I think I'm very proud. You know, it's no secret that Buffy Wicks is one of my closest colleagues, and Jesse Gabriel. Right. We all work very well together. But you know, we know that housing and homelessness are, you know, the top issue facing our state, and we have to make more progress. We've made a lot of progress as a state, but we have to do that much more and double down to ensure that these policies are actually working.
All right, we're going to take a break in a second, but I am curious. Like, you came in saying, I want to have a more collaborative process. There was a sense that your predecessor empowered committee chairs to do a lot. Predecessors before then kind of ruled with more of an iron fist. I'm just curious, like, what sort of direction have you given folks? If there's a big bill, I know you've said every bill will get a hearing, but a controversial bill, how closely are you working with committee chairs to decide kind of how that process is going to move forward?
Sure. And, you know, ideally, you know, every bill gets a vote is, you know, ideal. It's great. My expectation is that authors will work in good faith with committee chairs, with staff. You know, again, it's about collaboration, and it's about, ensuring that there's consensus within our caucus when it comes to a larger piece of legislation and working through those issues. And if legislators are working in good faith, then I expect those bills to be heard. Mm-hmm. But you'll be involved
in those conversations.
And I have been very involved in all those. You know, I have my own bill package this year. I'm still working through that in what little time I have. But as I mentioned, I was going to be very engaged, and I have been working with our chairs on a daily basis and with members of our caucus.
Awesome. All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer. Today we're in Sacramento speaking with Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas. He's a Democrat who's been on this job for about 9 months.
Speaker Rivas, one of the things you have had to tackle along with the rest of your caucus and the legislature is retail theft. You know, it's become a big issue, not just in California, but Fox News has also, in that echo chamber, really made a focus of that. There's different, you know, strains of thought about what to do. Some say we need to revise Prop 47, the ballot measure from 10 years ago. Others, like the governor, are saying, no, it's really about organized retail theft rings. I know you've created a committee to look at this. What are you finding?
You know, and I appreciate the question and you mentioning that. And really, it was all of the concern that had been expressed by members of our caucus in particular. You know, it was Rick Zipper was the initial member from the Burbank area. To just call and voice his concern of the problems he was seeing in his communities, of these organized retail theft rings, these raids at shopping malls and shopping centers. And so I mobilized very quickly to be as proactive as we could to do something, you know. And so we launched this, it was a select committee on organized retail theft. I'm so thankful for the work on behalf of staff, the members who participated. I think they've had a couple of hearings. It mobilized very quickly, that work. We launched that committee at the end of October. And our goal was to have these informational hearings, engage with all stakeholders to get a better understanding of the problem. Because organized retail theft is having a chilling effect on our communities. There's no doubt about that. We could talk about the social media videos, but someone like myself is on the road constantly. When I was traveling, I think it was in San Francisco, I had forgotten some deodorant, so I had to run to Rite Aid, which usually would take about 5 minutes.
Locked
it
up.
It took me a half hour because of, you know, there was only a couple employees, it was all locked up, and that's when I noticed, you know, a huge difference. And you know, it's a problem. And so the whole goal of that committee was to engage stakeholders to better understand the problem, and then through that process, find some solutions.
I'm just wondering, because you'll hear from retailers, you'll hear from law enforcement. I would imagine you're hearing conflicting things, right? So how do you figure out what the way forward is?
Well, I appreciate all of the reporting on this. I think Marissa's article was a good one.
Thank you.
And there's you know, from the moment Prop 47 was passed years ago, there's been attempts to roll it back. And so, when it comes to organized retail theft, my goal was to understand the root causes of this problem, not to just be overreactive and be quick to offer, you know, some solutions that would repeal Prop 47. I appreciate the governor coming out and making his comments. You know, I don't want to go back to the ballot. I don't think we need to repeal Prop 47. And that's why I've been working with members of our caucus, in particular Rick Zabur, and we offered a very comprehensive bill that we believe will address a lot of what we're experiencing when it comes to organized retail theft. And we're having we are rolling out a package of bills in this space. One bill that I think is not getting enough attention. There's been some recent reporting on it as well, but it's undeniable. There's an undeniable connection when it comes to the proliferation of organized retail theft and the ease in selling stolen goods on these online marketplaces and e-commerce platforms. And so expecting more transparency and accountability from them needs to be a part of the solution. They have to do much more to prevent the sale of stolen goods. And so we will have legislation that will do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is one of the things I found is that there's like so many entry points to this problem, you know, starting from people who are stealing because they have either needs financially or they have a drug, you know, addiction they're feeding. I'm curious though, we see the DAs and the retailers out there collecting signatures for a ballot measure. The governor's made clear he doesn't want to see that on the ballot. You just said you don't think it's necessary. Critics, like just this week I talked to the Yolo County DA, Jeff Riesick, and he says he feels like to fix, quote unquote, what he sees as the problems, you have to go back. You have to reinstate felony petty theft with a prior. You need to really rewrite the organized retail statute. Do you see a path in these conversations to finding a legislative solution that won't, you know, result in them kind of like supporting these bills and then also going to the ballot?
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't, you know, I see a pathway, you know, and the work we have done, I appreciate the work of Kevin McCarty. He's done everything that I have asked him to do, which is engage.
We should just say Sacramento Assemblyman, who's now chairing Public Safety Committee.
Yes.
Public Safety.
A lot of people think it's Kevin McCarthy. You know, it's not him.
Public Nothing chair. To do with
Kevin
him.
McCarthy from Sacramento. But he is engaged. And so we have engaged all stakeholders. And I have made, my comments known and my views known on this space that I prefer the legislative process because it allows us to engage all stakeholders and refine any bill throughout that process. When you talk about Prop 47, the important criminal justice reforms that we have undertaken in this state, me personally, there's no going backwards. There's only going forward. And it begins by having this engagement, but more importantly, again, understanding the root causes of this problem. And I firmly believe in the legislation that we have proposed. It addresses a lot of these problems when it comes to organized retail theft.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these problems are intersecting in some ways. You know, homelessness, retail theft, drug addiction, and fentanyl is obviously a crisis in cities. In San Francisco, it's like two people a day dying on average of overdoses. How do you think about that? I mean, there were a lot of bills last year with a different committee chair that didn't really move very quickly as far as some people saw. How do you balance like the need for like punishment, enforcement, law enforcement versus harm reduction, addiction services, and that sort of thing?
Right. Well, that's, that's very challenging, you know, as far as finding that balance. We know the crisis at hand. We know it's an epidemic. We know the interventions that need to take place, you know, ensuring that we have resources, whether it's the public services to support people who have an addiction, ensure that this is a public safety crisis, this is a public health crisis, and there's been a lot of efforts by the legislature and through the governor's office when it comes to the allocation of Narcan, ensuring that we have it at scale for our communities. But when it comes to balancing the need between penalties and those resources, that's something that we know we have to do a better job at engaging all stakeholders this year, and that's my commitment. I've worked very closely with Mike McGuire, the Senate pro tem. He understands and recognizes the leadership role we have played in the Assembly when it comes to organized retail theft. They've done something similar with fentanyl, and so he and I have been working on these issues together in the last few weeks.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer. Our guest today is Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas. He is a Democrat from Salinas. All right, we got to get you to talk about the budget before we leave. But before we get to that, I do want to ask you about one thing that's been in the news, which is a dust up over the fast food bill and whether Panera was part of it, which is sort of it doesn't seem like that particular company is exempted. But there's been a lot of reporting around the use of non-disclosure agreements by outside groups. So, say, a union and a business getting together and maybe coming to some agreement about what they'd like to see the legislature does and then essentially presenting that to you guys. Is that a fair characterization of what we're seeing reported about? Yeah.
To be quite honest, I've not been engaged on this particular issue. I'm obviously aware of the reporting around the Panera Gate.
I mean, have you ever been asked to sign an NDA?
No, I have
I can't
not.
Imagine
no,
a public I, official could, right?
No, I was unaware it was a thing until recently when just this reading, came that, up. Yeah, just reading the headlines.
I just want to ask, because it seems to me the heart of a lot of this is actually about the way the legislative process works, which is that often outside groups on all sides of the political spectrum bring you guys language and they say, hey, we would love someone to carry this bill. Is that in itself problematic? Because that seems like what a lot of the debate has sort of kind of gone into. And I just wonder how you feel about that process.
Yeah, I think it can be problematic. Every legislator is different. I remember my former colleague, Mark Stone from Santa Cruz, he always would author his own bills.
That was a thing for him.
And, for us, certainly we're presented with ideas. But as soon as we make the decision to run with that idea, we introduce the bill, it's my bill.
You have ownership.
And so I have ownership of that bill. And I make all of the decisions when it comes to amendments, if we change language and bill. And that happens very, very often. In my experience, whether it was a farm worker housing bill, an environmental bill, we're working education bill. Certainly, every legislator is different. Their process is different, but I think we all, understand and are well aware of the strong interests that that work with our legislature. I think that it is concerning, and it does deserve some level of discussion.
Republicans, of course, are trying to make hay out of this. This is like the best thing that's happened since Gavin Newsom ate at French Laundry during the pandemic. And Vince Fong, assemblyman from the Bakersfield area, has introduced legislation that would ban the use of these non-disclosure agreements and even invalidate any laws that came about as the result of that. Is that a non-starter? What do you make of that? Is that just posturing?
I'd have to look at it. To me, it sounds like posturing. When you talk about invalidating laws impacted by
it feels like there would be
NDAs.
Some First Amendment concerns there.
Be some concerns there. Certainly I look forward to looking at the legislation. I haven't had a chance to look at it.
All right. Well, it's going to get a hearing because they all get a hearing. We'll see. All right. So let's talk about this budget deficit. This is really the meat of, I think, your job over the coming months. The LAO, the legislative analyst, says it could be as high as $73 billion. The governor's office in January said around $38 billion. I guess to start, whatever number it is, it's a big one. Are you open to reopening this year's budget, to starting early?
Yeah. So my, I've had a very brief initial conversation with the governor. And as I mentioned to the governor, I'm certainly, I'm committed. I know our new assembly budget chair, Mr. Jesse Gabriel, he's committed to early action as well.
Okay. So that could mean cuts this year that roll into
next year.
Well,
we know we have to make some difficult some decisions. I mean, there's no question. But for us, our focus, we've been very engaged in the budget. And for us, it starts with process. Process is incredibly important for me. It's very important to our Assembly Caucus. And that's why thus far this year, our approach has been one, has been very methodical and strategic in the sense of our commitment to transparency and having a very deliberative budget process that puts protecting our most vulnerable Californians first. But it's also about, because we have to make these tough decisions, and it's going to impact communities and residents and so many different stakeholders, we are absolutely committed to our public our budget process. I think thus far we've had about 17 hearings. When it comes to the work of our budget subcommittees, we have another 6 planned next week, and we have 25 scheduled for April.
Are you open?
So we have to be very thorough in that work.
Are you, there's cuts and then there's new revenue. Are you open at all to new taxes, new revenue to help balance the budget?
No one wants to increase taxes.
Even in an election year?
And it's really nothing that we're looking at. When you look at the governor's proposal, it didn't include any increases, broad-based increases to individual or family taxes. I think, there are a number of ways that we can work to balance our budget. We know we're in a strong financial position with the reserves. We have to be very prudent in how we allocate them. But one area that we have put more focus on as the Assembly is I worked this summer to create a Budget Subcommittee 7 on Oversight and Accountability to ensure that we're looking at that rearview mirror. We have to do a much better job as a legislature in looking in that rearview mirror to ensure that a lot of these historic investments we're making as a state, that they're being implemented efficiently and effectively. That's incredibly important, oversight and accountability. It's what residents want us to focus on, and proud of the hearings we have had thus far. I believe we've had one on broadband, on housing, and really targeting inefficient spending.
All right. Before we wrap up here, you've talked to us before about struggling or living with a stutter as a kid, something, a lifelong thing. We actually had Maya Chupkov on the show yesterday, who is an advocate who I think brought you the idea of Stuttering Awareness Week.
Did, yeah.
And we've seen the president talk about this more openly again recently after, unfortunately, former President Trump made fun of him for it. I'm just curious, what it's like. I think the conversation's changed a lot around this. You have people like Maya out there, advocating mm-hmm. for this. What's your message to young people? Because, you're in a very high-profile position where mm-hmm. speaking happens all the time.
All the time.
It's literally called speaker.
And through this interview, you could hear it. Awkward pauses, stuttering is something that, I have talked openly about. And I appreciate Maya. I admire her courage. And the work she does, and I know when families and children approach me about, a stutter, I just always encourage them to work hard at improving. It's very challenging. It's something I've had to live with my entire life, and I appreciated the opportunity last year to be part of that press conference with Maya and so many others that are impacted by stuttering. It was one of the more challenging things I've ever had to do, because it just brings back so many memories of struggles I've had throughout my life. With public speaking, as Maya, I'm sure, told you, we all have our coping mechanisms and how we deal with it, and some people are very good at hiding it, but when you use fillers like sometimes you have to put a letter in front of a word, and many times after I'm speaking, someone will come and say, "Hey, you said too many times." If I didn't say then nothing would come out, and so it's it's a way of life, but certainly, I'm proud to have worked hard to overcome it, and I, like I always say, I'm certainly much better for it. I'm sure it drives my staff crazy. I knew that Maya was on the show yesterday, and so I figured that you guys would ask something on stuttering, and so you'd see. you know, a lot of time and effort goes into all of these, how we have to mark up all these points and words I can't
Your
say.
Your strategies to sort of,
She mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you for being open about it. I think it means a lot to a lot of people. That is Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
That'll do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We're a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our engineer today is Seal Muller. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. We'll see you next time.